Welcome to this special edition of the RSO Podcast. I'm Julie Thomas, Executive Director of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. Well, with two concerts under our belts, we thought it might be time to have an update on our music director search. I'm joined today by Dr. Arnold Rosen, the chair of the RSO Music Director Search Committee, and Henry Fogel, the artistic consultant, helping facilitate our search process. I'd like to start by asking both of you to give a general update on how the first two finalist experiences have been. Arnie, why don't we start with you?
Well, it just felt so good to get the ball rolling. I loved the first concert for a variety of reasons, but high on that list is just that it was underway, finally. It didn't hurt that our first candidate, Yaniv Attar, was wonderful, that the program was great, and that the audience loved it, and I did too. The second concert with Scott Terrell, a very different program, very satisfying, not just interesting, but musical, good, wonderful experiences for the candidates, I think, who flattered us by saying how organized we were. Great experiences for the players, who seemed very much to enjoy both directors and the repertoire. I think we're off to a great start. And the audience in Rockford now knows that we have chosen very serious contenders. They know that there's great talent out there, and I think we very much whet their appetite for what's to come.
Henry, do you have anything to add?
Well, I would just comment that the hard work of the search is actually done before the public gets to see the final candidates. The Rockford Symphony had over 200 conductors apply for this position, which is extraordinary when you think about it. And a lot of work was done looking at resumes, looking at video examples of the conductor's work. And the conductors who were chosen, frankly, are all good. I don't think it would be possible at this point for the Rockford Symphony to make a bad choice.
Well, that's very reassuring to hear. Thank you. You know, one of the comments that we heard a lot from patrons is regarding the concern that the next music director might not live full-time in Rockford. And Arnie, I know that we talked about this on our podcast in December with Phil Davidson, but it seems like this topic is worth revisiting because it certainly has, I've had that question asked to me several times over the course of the last few weeks, and I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit more.
Yes, this question continues to rear its ugly head among patrons and some of the musicians, and I've stopped counting the number of degrees my head has turned on this very issue. I've gone from bummer, the problem, the person probably won't live here, to, oh, well, I guess that's okay, to, you know, it doesn't make sense to expect, it doesn't make sense to even want that necessarily, to, gee, it might be best if they work elsewhere too, because there'll be cross-fertilization and there's more of a fringe benefit. So I've gone around and around on that one. But I'm personally quite content with the prospect of getting the best talent possible. And that means that we can't require that they live here. We don't have a full-time orchestra. We don't have a 50-week season. Many of our musicians play in multiple orchestras. We don't question that they're devoted to the RSO or that they care about the quality of our sound. There are a variety of factors that I think make it perfectly fine that the person not reside here.
Well, Henry, I know you have experience with many, many orchestras who are in this very scenario. Can you kind of talk to some of the merits of having a music director that may or may not have multiple orchestras?
Well, the first thing that everybody has to remember is that a conductor has to conduct. Unlike a violinist in the orchestra who can get a couple of friends at home and play chamber music, a conductor can only conduct when standing in front of an orchestra. And you can't do that if you're a professional conductor, 6 or 7 concerts a year. You just can't. You won't grow, you'll get stale. So the truth is that if the conductor were to have no other position, they would still be flying all over the world, certainly all over the United States, as guest conductors. They can't just sit home. The second thing is that when you say live here, what does that really mean? most of the orchestras that have full seasons, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, the conductors don't live there. What's really important is that when you reach an agreement with a conductor, you agree on how many weeks a year beyond the conducting weeks that conductor will be in Rockford. And then the board and the management plan activities so that that person is really visible in the community when that person is here. Also, in my mind, ideally, the conductor will have another position because that opens up all kinds of possibilities for cooperation between two orchestras. It might open up possibilities for getting good soloists because the conductor can offer two engagements to a pianist or a violinist. And most importantly, the conductor will grow from having the experience of conducting different orchestras. That's really, really important.
I think a lot of people don't realize that for 12 years during Steve Larson's tenure, he did have another orchestra. He was the music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. So that's not unusual for our organization, but I think it probably wasn't very known to a lot of our patrons.
I'll tell you a quick story of a conductor whose name was Eckhart Proy, who was music director of two orchestras, Spokane, Washington, and Stamford, Connecticut. You can't get farther apart. And I happened in my years as president of the League of American Orchestras to visit both orchestras during his tenure. The communities in both cases generally thought he lived there because when he was there, he was present. He went to events that the organization had put on. He represented the orchestra at community organizations. He spoke before the Rotary or whatever in both cities. And the audiences and supporters of both orchestras thought Eckhart Proy lived in Stamford or Spokane. Fascinating.
So to state the obvious, really, it's about choosing the right person. And the right person, I suppose, we could view as playing more than one instrument. One orchestra and another orchestra. And the fact that this person might play both doesn't mean that they're less dedicated to either. I think that's a great way to put it, Henry. A great way to view it is that a conductor must conduct. They can't go in their room with their violin or tuba, if they're very sophisticated, and just practice. They need to be conducting. And again, I would point out that so many of our musicians in the RSO live elsewhere, and they do just fine for us here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing that comes up a lot is we've got 9 finalists, that our process is taking an entire calendar year, which we are really excited about, but of course, the question is, how do we remember or do those two people at the beginning who have the first two concerts, how or do they have a chance? Are we going to remember them? And how are we going to make sure that these 9 candidates are all on equal footing and have equal chances at this opportunity?
Well, at the first meeting of the search committee, I remember saying to everyone sitting around that table, take notes. Take extensive notes on every conductor, what they do on the podium, what they do in the interviews, how they interact during the week with social events or whatever. Take notes. And my experience, and this is probably about the 35th or 40th search that I've done in my career for smaller orchestras, my experience is the committee remembers very well, and I can name 3 or 4 cases where the first candidate was the one chosen. And conductors have often said to me, "Oh, I'm so unlucky. I got the first slot, and they'll never remember me." I usually say to them, "First of all, there were 180 applicants, and you got a slot, 1 of 6. So already, don't tell me you're unlucky." But secondly, I guarantee you, they will remember you. Especially if you're really good.
There are a lot of practical challenges to this, of course. But think about it. if we were doing a proper scientific experiment, we would have 9 different music directors. That would be the variable in the experiment. But everything else would be constant. It would be the same program. It would be the same audience, same soloist. And somehow, magically, without the bias or the boredom that might come from having heard that program multiple times with previous candidates. So no matter how you slice this, there are going to be some limitations. But given that, if you follow Henry's instructions, and I always try to, I've been keeping a very detailed diary after all of my interactions with the first two candidates, you can take note easily of the things that really stand out or are unique to that person. And it doesn't have to have anything necessarily to do with the baton and what goes on the podium. There are so many factors. Those are the things that make people interesting.
There's one other point that I would make. There is, in fact, no such thing as the one right choice. If you've done your work well in this search, almost any one of the candidates will be a terrific choice because they're all good. I remember a search I did once for an orchestra, I'm not going to name it, that had 5 concerts, so it had 5 finalists through a season. And at the end of the last concert, the day after the last concert, I met with the search committee. The musicians on the search committee said, "We do not have a preference. We love them all. We would be thrilled if any one of them were hired." And I said to them, "Well, there must be some grade of difference." They said, "Well, there's one of the 5 that we're just a teeny bit less enthusiastic about." So I said, "All right, for the moment, let's put that name aside. Now, what about the other 4? "We don't care. We would be ecstatic with any one of them." The search committee then spent, and I'm not exaggerating, almost 2 hours analyzing every answer that each conductor gave to each question, the way they interacted with donors and so forth, to try to find a reason to pick one. They did eventually, and it was a good choice, but any one of the choices would have been a good choice. And I happen to think that that's the case with the list of finalists Rockford has.
Well, one of the things that we have made a priority is, of course, we're recording everything. The concerts are recorded, the podcasts, the sound bites, the pre-concert lecture. So we have a reference for the actual experience. But we really are taking seriously the feedback from the musicians and from the community. And you referenced the surveys earlier. That's a really important component of this process. And I know Arnie's got some thoughts on that as well. And I should say, we read every comment that's coming through, and those will be archived.
Every comment. And I have been very impressed. Thank you, RSO audience. I've been very impressed at the very large number of comments, some of which are very detailed, that have come from our listeners and our patrons. They're funny in some cases in that they disagree so much. For example, on a given program, one listener may say, "This was wonderful. I loved every piece." And at the same concert, somebody might say, "Boy, this really wasn't my cup of tea." Even the musicians will have different reactions and criticisms. Musician A, "Oh, I love this candidate. He spent so much time working on phrasing and dynamics." And then the next person may say about the same person, "Not nearly enough attention was focused on phrasing and dynamics. This person was too detailed on fill in the blank. This person didn't spend nearly enough time on fill in the blank." It's really very interesting. That doesn't mean there aren't trends. Of course there are, but on any given night, on any given rehearsal, any given listener will have different thoughts. But the details are not lost on us, and we're very grateful for the attention that you're paying to these candidates.
A quick story from my years managing the Chicago Symphony, and again, I'm not going to name the conductor, but a very well-known guest conductor came and spent 2 weeks in Chicago. 2 musicians felt so strongly about this conductor that they handwrote a note and sent it to my office. One said, It is an insult to me and my colleagues that you allow this person to stand on the podium. You expect me to play the cello. I expect conductors to beat. I can't figure out where his beat is, and I have no idea, and I just, I really am annoyed that you keep re-inviting him. This was a cellist who'd been in the orchestra about 25 years, from a flute piccolo player who had also been in the orchestra 25 or 30 years. I want you to know there is no conductor that I look more forward to than X every year when he comes. His sense of fantasy and imagination is why I got into music. So I did the only thing a smart manager would do. I whited out the names, made photocopies of the two notes, sent them each to the other musician with a note from me saying, see how hard it is to get a consensus around here. But it makes actually a very valid point. Different musicians look for different things from the conductor. There were musicians who loved about Daniel Barenboim, loved the fact that the Saturday concert would have many differences from the Thursday and Friday concerts. And there were other musicians who hated that.
Well, we are just excited that we have seven more candidates. Andrew Krust is coming next week. He will join us on Monday for the first rehearsal with the orchestra. And then, of course, Saturday, which is March 19th, he will be conducting the Hollywood Sound, Rachmaninoff and the Hollywood Sound. We invite everyone to attend. Gentlemen, any last comments?
Please show up. Vote with your feet and your ears.
And stay engaged. Consider this an exciting time for the Rockford Symphony.
Thank you very much.